Electrician Conversations, a podcast for electricians hosted by an electrician. The Electrical Association is committed to keeping electricians in the know about the latest developments in the industry. Experts will be on to help answer the tough questions, talk shop, and give tips to make your jobs work.
Greetings. I'd like to welcome you to another podcast presentation of Spark and Conversation by the Electrical Association. I'm Mike Miller, your host. I'd like to thank you for choosing this Electrical Association podcast for one of your sources of information for activity going on in the electrical trade. I'd also like to extend our special thanks to Federated Insurance for being our sponsor of this and many activities of the Electrical Association. Today's presentation features an individual who is Regional Marketing Manager for Federated Insurance. I'd like to welcome to our virtual studio Mr. Jordy Christian, a corporate member of Electrical Association. Jordy, welcome to our podcast.
Hey, Mike. I appreciate the chance to visit today and looking forward to the time we're going to spend together. It should be exciting.
Well, it always has been in the past, and we've had some very interesting guests on board, and of course, you're no exception, especially thanking you personally and Federated for the support you've given the Electrical Association over the years. It's greatly appreciated. So let's get started. Jordy, please give our listeners some details about your life and educational experiences and current role with Federated Insurance as Regional Marketing Manager.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, Mike, and again, I appreciate the chance to come on. I grew up in Minnesota. I'm born and raised. I grew up in Moorhead, Minnesota. I was a spud, you know, grew up. I was fortunate enough. My upbringing, my parents were very involved, and my dad was actually involved in the kind of construction industry. My great grandpa built some structures up in northern Minnesota, up in the Warroad area. And I grew up around small business. My grandfather built hockey sticks. My other grandfather was a beer distributor, and I was fortunate to grow up sweeping floors and being involved and seeing the impact small businesses have on the community. And I went to school at St. Cloud State. I was very blessed. I played hockey there. So to find a career where I got to kind of stay in the state I grew up in and get to work with small businesses was one of the things that drew me to Federated and the insurance industry in general. But I've been at Federated for 11 years. I've done multiple different roles, and my current one is very people-driven, and I get to work with great associations like the Electrical Association here in Minnesota. So I've been super blessed. I've been able to, like I said, kind of stay home locally, home where I grew up. Now I'm chasing kids around the rink, and we have a 5-year-old Brooks, 3-year-old Elsie, and 9-month-old Mari. So my wife Jessica and I are very busy wrangling kids, but we wouldn't have life any other way. And the work side and the personal side has been fun to watch come together. Like a lot of contractors, you're kind of always working. So that's been the fun part for me so far. And again, I'm pretty excited to spend some time with you here today and talk about an industry that I have a lot of respect for and love helping on each day.
Well, you know, it sounds like you come from some real excellent roots, and especially your experience in building. You certainly know the struggles of contractors. And now from an insurance side, we're going to pick your brain and find out we can find out about the contracting business and insurance. So the first question I'd like to run by Jordy is this: given the complexity of insurance and the dynamic nature of legal landscape for business like electrical contractors, how should an insurance business ensure that the clients receive tailored guidance and support to navigate evolving insurance needs, laws, and values?
I mean, and there's a lot to unpack there, Mike, but I think, you know, it's at first, the question is always, what do you do? Right. So to look at a business and look at the risk they have, you have to understand what do they do. And for an electrical contractor, that can be very simple, but it's also very complex. So what projects are you working on? What, you know, what does your day-to-day look like? You know, what is unique about your business? So from our perspective in the industry, it's a legal contract. So your insurance documents are, you know, legal contracts between you and an insurance company that for a defined set of, you know, agreements, you're transferring risk from yourself to an insurance company. And there's a lot of power in that. And there's a lot of things that can be missed in that. So, you know, sitting down as a business owner, you know, a few times a year with your insurance provider is never a bad thing, because at the bare minimum, they're learning more about you and your business. And the more that we understand about what you do, the better we can tailor that ultimate product to you and your business and the risk that you face every day.
You know, that's an excellent answer. I kind of thought that's where it would go. But, you know, Jordy, as a contractor myself, I remember insurance people very detailed and aiming and focusing on what I'm doing. I was impressed with that. I'm glad you follow that same suit. And believe me, I as a contractor, I can tell you it works. So the next thing we take a look at, and you probably heard this as an insurance person before, some contractors have shared ideas with me and how they're insurance poor. Some electricians joining the ranks as contractors, please suggest some strategies to steer away from that pitfall of insurance poor.
Absolutely. I think, you know, when you look at any business, it ultimately comes down to, if I'm looking at it from a client perspective, and before we even talk about insurance, you make all of these decisions on whether it's, you know, marketing or insurance or banking, and you have expenses, and then you have things that add value to your business. And, you know, one thing about insurance is that when you tailor a product to your company, you want to make sure that you're spending your dollars from what I consider a top-down approach. When I look at what can happen to a business, especially electrical contractors, there are claims that can happen that can put you out of business. You know, you think of in today's world with the legal environment we're in and just, you know, some of the things we're seeing in our world from, you know, litigation, and there are claims that are really big that can happen. And then there are what I would call the more nuisance claims, like they're, aw, shucks, you know, I cracked my windshield today. That's not fun, but it's not going to put me out of business. And when you look at your first question in terms of, like you asked, how can I tailor coverage and an insurance program to my business? There are unique ways where, you know, I always say in today's world, you can self-insure things. You don't have to self-insure everything, but any good advisor will walk you through a line of questions and coverages where, you know, you might have coverages another contractor doesn't deem important. That's okay. From a high level, really making sure you have the coverages that you deem necessary for your level of risk tolerance and what the industry is seeing from a claims perspective can allow you to feel like you have some control in how your premium dollars are being spent. And at the end of the day, you know, when you look at a great year from a contractor perspective and an insurance carrier perspective, is you don't really want to have claims. You know, you want to keep your people safe. You want to do good work. And then how can your insurance program become a value center and add value to your business versus looking at it as an expense? There's a lot of power in making sure that's how you can view your partnership with your insurance carrier.
Jordy, that was an absolute perfect answer on that. What you, the suggestion of strategies and steering away from insurance poor. But, you know, I've seen it in the past, and you probably have too, and maybe you can address this in my follow-up question here. And that's, do you find that a lot of contractors, after they've covered the state required, the insurance required for even electrical, do you find a lot of people going the smorgasbord route as far as picking and choosing what they purchase after that?
I do, Mike. I think that's a great kind of segue into that. You know, when you brought up, you know, that state's bond, the required coverages, when you think of a contractor, you open up your business and you have to have those state, the coverages the state requires. So you think, I buy liability insurance, and then I add on, I might have a building, I might have some vehicles, I might start with some employees. So I'm talking about workers' comp. And, you know, you're going to have the coverages that I would say are very required. And then you're going to have a lot of coverages that, you know, are going to seem almost complex, but you as a contractor might see the need because of the risk you have. Kind of going back to that first question we talked about with tailoring your coverage. But I think it does come back to having really good conversations around not only what your business does, but your risk tolerance. And I'll give you one small concept here, and I'll try to summarize it, but something as simple as a deductible. You know, I can have a $500 deductible on a line of coverage. I can have a $25,000 deductible on a line of coverage. So I could still be buying what I would consider an optional coverage that might not be in the core coverage for a contractor, but I'll have catastrophic coverage if that claim happens. I just might have more skin in the game. And I do see that becoming more and more common as you look at the industry. You can have a contractor that, depending upon their size, has different coverage needs, but wants to keep their premium levels in check. And that's where that, you know, conversation comes into play of coverages and what level I have from a skin in the game perspective. So there's a lot of optional coverages that a contractor might get on their plate in addition to what I would consider your core coverages that are common to every contractor.
Okay. Well, that certainly makes a lot of sense. And, you know, this next question is almost kind of a tough one to ask in some cases, because it's what we call a rhetorical question where there's no defined answer, but.
Those are always the tough ones, Mike. You're right. You're spot on.
Well, you know, you could flip a coin and probably come up with the right answer, but the situation with the economy right now, it's kind of, we're certainly not choosing any sides politically, but we're certainly seeing some drops, which kind of staggering and it's kind of sad in some cases, while other facets of business are doing okay. But recognizing that inflation elevates the cost of everything, which we know it does, what impact does it have on premium hikes compared to loss experience, as in paying out benefits for insurance sellers?
It's a great question. Yeah, I mean, Mike, that's a very good question, and one that, you know, is a little bit complex in today's world. And you know, on the inflation side, it definitely impacts almost every industry. And, you know, you see and you talk to contractors every day and, you know, just material costs and wage inflation. And then in our industry, it's different, but similar when you think of, you know, we pay out claims. So when a car goes into the body shop, we're paying a higher dollar amount to fix that car. When there's a fire and a building burns down, the cost of reconstruction has gone up. So that organically filters into, you know, when you look at different insurance carriers and how they come up with their rate structure and what they do from a, you know, when they model out their loss, every carrier is going to look into the future and go, there's some expected losses that we know are going to happen. And then it's how good can we get at predicting what we're going to have. And, you know, so a contractor, you know, when I look at a way to probably help the membership, would be, I would like to control my claims experience as best as I can, because there is a big element when you look at how insurance, you know, is created from a very organic level. If you have a contractor over here that's having a ton of claims and a contractor over here that's having no claims and they have great safety practices, they have great risk management, that's what I would be looking at if I'm a contractor. I would want to control my claims experience to provide the insurance carrier the absolute best case. I would say even put my best foot forward. And when that carrier is looking at my risk, I want them to see me as less risky than another contractor per se in the market. And again, I think there's things that are out of our control, which you look at the economic factors you brought in. That's if I'm a contractor in Minnesota, I don't know if I have a lot of control over where that's heading, but I would like to control what a carrier thinks of my risk. And I think there's a lot of power in that for a lot of your membership and a lot of what we see day to day. It's a great group of contractors that does care about their safety and risk management.
Well, you know, I can echo that sentiment as well. And just the classes I've taught called the OSHA class, a standard for electrical safety in the workplace. It used to be like when I started with the Electrical Association, there was some call for it, but it is greatly growing. Every year we see additional people signing on to get their people into these classes. Just first of all, it's required by OSHA, but secondly, it's very valuable in pointing out personal protective equipment and things like that. So I think to echo, you bet, it's really happening. And I'm really pleased to say that. Kudos to all of our contractors that are listening today. Keep up the good work and safety, because you know what? It's money in your pocket, as Jordy's telling us. So Jordy, next question, want to take on, and this is something you probably can address with real pro aspect, and that's turning our thoughts to loss prevention. Could you provide some insights into the specific measures and methods implemented within your loss prevention programs that mitigate risks and minimize potential claims for your clients?
It's a great question, Mike, and I kind of, again, it's a good piggyback into what we were just talking about. You know, when you look at, and we've talked a little bit about a wide range of topics here so far, and And when you look at what an insurance provider should be helping you with, loss prevention is number one. And in our world, you know, we talk about risk management and helping a contractor manage and mitigate their risk. And, you know, there's a wide range of services and value that an insurance provider should be and could be providing their client, which is our contractors. You know, number one right now that you can look at and think about is driving. You know, a lot of us spend a lot of time on the road. And when you look at a lot of a contractor's operation, it's mobile. So how can we help them have a great driving policy that hits all the major areas that employees are going to be doing day to day? So teaching good driving habits, you know, limiting distracted driving, you know, implementing technology is becoming a big thing. And you're hearing telematics and, you know, there's things that we can provide our clients that the industry is getting more aware of to limit those preventable crashes. You know, in your industry, work comp is a huge one. And number one, and this goes back to, you know, how I alluded to, you know, my upbringing was being around my grandfathers and their businesses. They wanted their employees to have a great job. They wanted them to come to work. But number one, they wanted them to go home to their families. So when you think of loss prevention and what we can help a contractor with is all those little safety programs that, yes, they will help you prevent a claim. But number one, they will keep you and your employees safe. And safe companies are where people want to work. And they also will, if over the long run, become a profit center for a business. So there's numerous little things when you talk about policies and procedures and safety meetings and training programs that an insurance company and your insurance provider can help you with when you look at loss prevention.
Okay. Well, I tell you, I have seen Federated's loss prevention packets in our offices. We have disseminated such, and then not just because it's Federated, but we believe that it's something that if a contractor isn't doing, he's missing the boat and it's going to cost him ultimately. Bottom line, you know, when you mentioned every person is guaranteed to go home in the same condition they came in the morning, did you know that OSHA requires that as well? That's a requirement, other than a few fair wear and tear on your body associated with fatigue. That's normal. But you know what? You are right on when you say that. And our contractors are hearing that from OSHA through our 70E program. Okay. Next thing I want to talk about. When it comes to legally required standby power systems, we as electrical contractors can provide a great deal of information about it. Let's turn the coin on the insurance industry. When it comes to legally required insurance, we may not be so knowledgeable. Please review, if you would, the legally required insurance coverage and the extent of such coverage any electrical contractor in Minnesota must have.
Well, yeah, and I think a lot of it comes down to the work that we're doing. And again, understanding the contractual obligation that we're going to have there. And a little bit of that, Mike, is I would say, yeah, I would still go down the path of it's going to still become what you're legally liable contractually. And those contracts that work, I don't think will be much different. But when you look at your contract that you have with your insurance provider, you want to make sure you're regularly reviewing those contracts and making sure you know exactly how your insurance will respond. And I think, again, as we continue to look at the future, those issues and things are changing at a rapid pace, which I'll kind of go back to how I started, you know, alluding to it in our conversation of this is a great time to sit down with your insurance provider and look at those obligations that you might be entering and understanding what risk you're taking on there as well.
Okay. But from a standpoint of the state, Jordy, obviously workman's comp, obviously a certain degree of liability. Can you tell us the fixed limits of that or a little bit more information about that? Because I got to be honest, I'm an implant to the state. I'm not a native here. I'm learning.
So like it's a great, and I appreciate that, Mike, you kind of giving me a little bit of a softball on that next question, because when you open up a business and you look at the contractual obligations to the state, you know, when I open up a shop in Minnesota, I get a contractor's license and I got to have general liability insurance. And your typical limit that you will see there on a standard insurance policy will now be $1 million. And the state, that's kind of where they're setting the, I would say, the bar, and that's the amount of liability you're buying. On the workman's comp side, I mean, that's going to determine, that'll be a lot of you know, driven by, I can open up a shop and I could be a self-employed electrical contractor where I am not required to have workman's comp. Where I would say in today's world, the minute you hire an employee that will do work for you, that's your trigger into having that state mandated workers' compensation program. And what that will be is in the simplest way I can put it, is you're going to have statutory limits of, you know, if I have X amount of payroll, I'm going to pay a predefined rate. And if that employee gets hurt on the job, the state mandates insurance carriers to have adequate coverage for that employee to get medical treatment, potentially get ongoing therapy. And then if the injury is bad enough, there are requirements from the state with the insurance carriers for disability benefits, death benefits, and then sometimes even rehabilitation for a different career. So the workman's comp side from a contractor perspective, I think, is still misunderstood of, well, when do I have to have it? And the answer to that is when you have an employee, or in today's world, we'll still see some 1099 employees that really are acting like an employee, and those employees might be pulled into the workers' comp pool for that contractor as well. So, you know, it's also kind of a, you know, where's your business at? Because if you just have you and yourself and you're just operating, you might just have liability coverage that's mandated. You might have vehicle coverage that you buy. Maybe you have a shop or you have material, so you have some property coverage, and then you might not need any workers' compensation coverage yet. And as you grow, that might be an area that you add on down the road.
Boy, it's certainly time to partner with your agent on day one. In my mind, I've been through this, and
absolutely, you could. That's a great way to, you know, I do think, Mike, that's a really simple way too. That, you know, when you look at insurance and just sitting down with your partner in that a couple times a year and allowing them and yourself as a contractor to just talk about that. That will limit those pitfalls that we find sometimes where you go, oh, no, I didn't know you were doing that. And I haven't talked to you for so long that I didn't know you added two employees. We've got to get them covered on work comp. So that is probably one of my best pieces of advice I've learned in my 11 years in the industry, is sitting down face to face with your insurance partner is very valuable for both parties.
I have to give you 100% kudos on that, because believe me, nothing to me, and of course, this is certainly my own opinion, but over the phone and email is good. It certainly sheds some light on it, but it takes away the human factor that I think is so valuable. You pay for your time. I know you do, but it's so worth it. All right, Jordy, another one. This is an easy one for an insurance person. I'm aware of it, but there's some of our listeners that may not be, and that's performance bond. So a performance bond, I know, is required for most every large project, and it may even be for even for smaller projects. But could you review for us some of the tips, or if newer contractors may need to know about bonds work and steps necessary to obtain one?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Mike, and one that I think is very misunderstood. When you hear the term bonding, you know, there's your, you know, bonds you'll have to have a license or to work in a city. And then when you hear the term performance bonding, I think a lot of contractors sometimes will shy away from that because they don't, it's not something that they need to do every day to do their work. And as the world evolves and the economy revolves around different type of work, you know, I think it's going to be something that becomes more common because there's going to be more public work potentially coming down the pipe. I'll put it as simply as I can. So a bond, when you look at what a performance bond does, is it, you know, if I get a contract with, I'm going to use yourself, Mike, as the project owner. If I'm going to build a building for Mike and he's the project owner and I'm going to do electrical work at that building, Mike might have me bond to him to make sure that I perform the work. So halfway through the project, if I don't do the work, the bond gets called and that insurance company will step in and do one of two things. They will pay the amount of the bond to Mike and he will then make sure somebody completes that work. Or in some cases, the bond company, which in most cases is an insurance company, they will go find another contractor and they will pay that contractor to complete the work. So the bond is protecting that project owner, or in a lot of cases, a general contractor, that's protecting them to make sure that me as a subcontractor is going to perform that work. And so what a lot of contractors I work with and see don't understand is you can get pre-qualified for bonding. You know, it's very financially driven, but it's also character and work driven, where when you sit down with a contractor, the bond company wants to know, you know, what projects have you done in the past? What are you capable of? Tell me about your people, you know, what's their experience? What's your wheelhouse? And they can get you pre-approved based on your character and your financial statements, which I'll kind of dive into here in a second. But those two things, you can get a pre-approved bonding program where you can go bid that work that would require performance bonding. And what I see with a lot of contractors, Mike, is some of them, they just need a little bit of coaching on that, you know, those financial statements, which they have great accounting partners that can help them with that, where they can put a really good foot forward and they're financially strong and they have great character and they have great employees and they can get bonding limits where they could potentially go get some really good work that is usually more in that public space that requires performance bonding.
Jordy, just a quick question on the bonding. Now, from a standpoint, let's say we have $1 million job. Are they asking us, and it's electrical, million on electrical on a $10 million project, are they asking for 100% performance on that, or are they going a portion of that?
No, it's a great question.
Is that typical? In my experience, they'll go a portion of it.
Yeah, it's very typical where it'll be for the amount of the contract. So when you bid the work, if I bid $1 million and that includes, you know, my labor, my material, and usually there's a profit margin built in there, you know, that will be the amount of the bond. And then, you know, when you look at a bonding program, there will be a rate that you will pay for that bond. And what a lot of contractors will do is, you know, for example, for easy math, because I want to make it easy for you and I this afternoon, that bond might cost me $5,000 or $10,000. So my bid will include the cost of my performance bond. So in reality, it's adding a little bit to the cost of my bid, but because I have the ability to bond, I can go bid that work.
Perfect. I've done it before. And also, we should just let our contractors know that performance bond usually includes the cost of a bid bond. In other words, I'm going to give them a bid and say, you want to just, I know what the bid bond is, but for those that may not be familiar with it, that might be interesting to know how a bid bond works.
And I'll back up there, Mike, and I appreciate you slowing me down because we kind of went down the performance bond route. But when I put my bid into, you know, let's say it's a state job for the state of Minnesota and there's a bid letting, I will also attach to my bid what's called a bid bond. And that bid bond, when you get approved for that bid bond, what it says, if you read through all kind of the legalese of that bid bond, it basically says, if I get awarded this job, so if I win the bid, XYZ insurance company will issue a performance bond for the amount of my bid. And that's where getting approved with that insurance carrier will allow you to know, let's say I'm approved as a contractor for $5 million per project and $10 million of total bonding capacity. As long as I'm staying under that, I know that bond issuer, that insurance company, is going to issue that performance bond. So the bid bond usually is no cost to that. It's attached to my bid. And it's just saying to that project owner or that general contractor that, hey, if Mike's Electric gets this bid, we're going to issue that performance bond. So they know they can accept my bid and I will be able to get the bond on the performance side as well.
Perfect. All right. Jordy, another one I want to ask. How often should a contractor review the coverage associated with workers' comp insurance? And I've heard it once a year enough or twice a year. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, I mean, workers' compensation is, you know, one that is going to, you know, it's going to ebb and flow with not only your experience mod, which is based on your claims in the state of Minnesota, but it's also going to ebb and flow on the size of your business. So, you know, there are some contractors that are very in tune with that, and they will tweak it a couple times a year. There are some that, you know, it's a little bit like taxes, Mike, where the carrier at the end of the year will say, hey, we charged you based on $1 million of payroll and let's settle up. You did 900,000. So here's premium back, or you did 1.1 million and you owe us a little bit of premium here. And every contractor that I've worked with, and I see other carriers work with, is a little bit in the mindset of they want to be in touch with it a couple times a year. So if you're pretty stable, like you haven't grown, you haven't shrunk, you have your same core guys, those haven't changed a whole lot. A lot of contractors are okay reviewing it once a year. For some that are going through some growth and they're adding payroll, they're adding employees, they might want to adjust it a couple times just to keep up with that wage growth. But that is a very, again, I know we talked about it earlier from a tailored coverage standpoint, that is also very dependent upon your customer and the contractor and how they want to adjust that.
Okay. Here's another one. Tell us a little bit about things that people often do not realize insurance companies take care of, such as business succession, estate planning, things like that. Is that something?
It's a fantastic question, Mike, and one that you know, when you think of insurance, and we a lot of times we think of, you know, things and vehicles and buildings, and I'm wiring that Walmart, and what happens if it burns down, and that is really important. But when you really boil it down to any company, and you look at whether it's an electrical contractor, and you know, it's they're people. And right now, when you think of what a lot of contractors are going through, is there's a lot of transition in the business world from, I would say, one of the greatest generations ever. And, you know, they've built these businesses up. They've run them for 40 years. And they're looking for ways to continue that business to the next generation. And that might be a family member. It might be an employee. And in a lot of cases, our contractors, and I see this a lot, is they don't know where to start, and they don't know how to get that conversation started. And our goal, and I think the insurance industry's goal, is that these small or large or however big your business is, has a game plan to succeed, hence the term succession planning, to succeed when you pass that baton to the next generation. And I use that analogy, Mike, because when you think of succession planning, I always use the analogy of a relay race with four runners going around the track. And when you watch them run around the track, they never lose the baton while they're running. They always lose it when they're handing it off. And helping a business hand that baton from one generation to the next and helping them set things up. Because again, there's risk there. So when I say risk management, there's people risk as well that a lot of us in the insurance world are more than happy to help a contractor get that conversation started of what could my options be when it comes to succession planning, and then even the estate planning side, and what are your risks and what are you trying to avoid? And, you know, when you think of estate planning, it's very simple. We all have stuff, and eventually all of us are not going to get out of this thing alive. So what do I want to have happen to my stuff? And for our contractor clients and the people in your membership, one of the biggest things they have is that business. And that's where that succession planning comes into play.
Well, that's a mouthful. That's absolutely for sure. Excellent advice and thoughts to consider. Jordy, in looking into the future of the electrical business, what do you perceive as the number one challenge in maintaining adequate insurance?
You know, I think when you look at the future, Mike, it kind of goes back to what this conversation is centered around, is having that partnership with an insurance carrier and provider that allows you to see where your business is going towards and what it's moving to. You know, I think all of us are in this together. And I think one of the things that every contractor is facing is, how do I hire, attract, and retain great people? If you have great people and you train them really well, and we teach them the right things to do when they're in the field and how to stay safe, well, that will bleed down to, hopefully, we have less insurance claims. So hiring great people, training them, keeping them, I think that's paramount for any contractor right now. And I think the industry is doing a ton of great things when you look at the partnerships that, you know, I look at the association and how they're looking towards workforce development and getting great young people into the trades. That's outstanding, because that will help a contractor become a better business, which in turn will help them out on their insurance side. I would say on the insurance side, from black and white, it will continue to evolve around contractual liability and what a contractor is faced with in terms of how much risk they're retaining and what their contracts are saying they need to either pass or they need to take from a job or a project owner or a general contractor. The contract law has evolved tremendously in the past decade to become so complex. And I see that continuing into the future as something the contractors, especially the subcontractors in the electrical world, will continue to need to keep an eye on with their insurance provider as well.
Jordy, if any of our listeners may be curious about learning more about insurance and electrical contracting business, what is the best way to contact you and or Federated Insurance?
Yeah, I appreciate that, Mike. And I think this has been such a fun and engaging dialogue. And I would tell any contractor, our number one goal is to see, can we be a great fit for you? Can we be a great partner? Can we add value to your business? And to do that, we have reps all over the state that are local. You can go on our website. You can right there type in, find my marketing representative, put your address in, and it'll pop up a name, contact info. Any one of our marketing reps are absolutely ready and excited to potentially see if we're a good fit. We have a number of contacts from the association side. Myself, you can look me up, shoot me an email, get in touch with the association. They will point you in the right direction as well. And we will be more than happy to sit down with you face-to-face and talk about your business and learn more about you and see if there is a potential for us to partner with you and help you out on the insurance side. So we're more than ready to help out. It's a fantastic industry, one that's evolving. It's complex. It's exciting. And you see that with the contractor members. They run unbelievable businesses that provide great careers to their employees, their communities, and they do just unbelievable work in this state. And it's really cool, Mike, I got to tell you, because I'm not very handy. I'll preface that with, I don't know that I could do the work, but I do really enjoy touring job sites with contractors and hearing them talk with so much pride in the work they provide. And you go through a building and you see those the workmanship that these contractors are doing, it's just mind blowing. And again, I look at it and go, I can't do that, but it is really, really an honor to partner with the companies that are doing it. So we're very ecstatic to be a great supporter of the association, and we hope to continue providing value to the members for a very long time.
Well, Jordy, you mentioned you don't have the dexterity and the skills to do what we do, but you know what? Your passion for the insurance company and insurance industry is so obvious that I would feel real good talking to you about most anything that had to do with insurance. Your service in the electrical industry is especially important and appreciated. I think it's been most kind of you to share your views and perspectives of what Federated is doing to create a sense of financial security to electrical contractors. And also, we would like to thank you again for the great support that you and Federated Insurance provide the Electrical Association every year. You know, it's partners like you that make our operation successful, and we greatly appreciate it. And so another podcast draws to a close. I would like to thank our guest, Jordy Christian, for taking time out of his busy schedule to share with our listeners information about Federated Insurance. Thank you, Jordy. Are there any final messages you'd like to share with our listeners?
No, Mike, I greatly appreciate the chance to just come and chat about, again, what is a great industry. And we really do enjoy partnering with great people. So I do appreciate the opportunity. I hope it was beneficial to the members just to hear a little bit more about Insurance 101. And if anybody has any questions, I love talking about it. I appreciate you saying that. I'm passionate about it, because when passionate people get together, good things usually happen from a partnership standpoint. So again, thanks for the time. We really appreciated it. And we very much are thankful for the partnership.
Well, Jordy, thank you so much. I'd really like to thank our executive producer, Katie Grams, for her work behind the scenes to make this podcast happen. Also, again, a big thank you to Federated Insurance, who sponsored this presentation. With that, I'd like to wish you all safe travel until we can join up another time for the Electrical Association's Sparkin' Conversation. I'm Mike Miller, your host. Good day.
Sparkin' Conversations was a production of the Electrical Association. For more information, visit www.electricalassociation.com.